Now, let me, in the finest Shakespearean tradition, introduce to you the characters of our play. Now, this is a tale of Shakespeare himself, of botany, and of the man whose imagination and gift for landscape gave form to Melbourne's Botanic Gardens. It's a tale, in short, of William Robert Guilfoyle, of plays and plants. How does all this come together? We will ask Diana Hill, because she is one of the editors of Mr. Guilfoyle's Shakespearean Botany, a collection of Mr. Guilfoyle's writing on the Bard's references to plant life. Diana, welcome.
Thank you, John. I'm pleased to be here.
What a wonderfully arcane venture. How did you get interested in this particular line of country?
Yeah, well, my mother, Edmé Cudmore's always been interested in botany, and she was a voluntary guide at the Botanical Gardens. And she was the one that knew all about Guilfoyle and really discovered some of his other writings, which formed a series of articles in the Banker's Magazine of Australasia. And so she discovered
them. Banker's Magazine.
Yeah, so.
This is getting more and more interesting.
So we couldn't find them all in the State Library, and Mum tried to think about where they could be, and we discovered the missing volumes in the ANZ archive. And the archivist, wow. Peter Marinick, said that we could take them out of the archive and photograph them. And the State Library kindly allowed us to have the other volumes.
This is yet to be raised in the Banking Royal Commission, but it's only a matter of time.
Exactly.
Look, let's go back a little. I mean, tell us about William Robert Guilfoyle. Interesting man.
Okay, well, he was the director of the Royal Botanical Gardens of Melbourne for 35 years, from 1873 to 1909.
So there wouldn't have been much there. Well,
von Mueller had another director that laid it out. But as a young man, he'd been on a ship called the HMS Challenger,
right,
in 1868, as a botanist and scientist. And he was very familiar with the South Sea Islands and all the botany around the South Pacific Islands.
And so if we look around those gardens, will we see sort of Shakespearean references as well?
Well, not Shakespeare so much. Well, you will see Shakespearean references, but also you'll see a volcano there.
Indeed.
The famous volcano from his trip in that South Sea Islands.
So that's a South Sea Island reference. Mm. Okay, so that's Guilfoyle, the botanist, the gardener. But Guilfoyle, the sort of assiduous, more fan of the Bard, I guess, and more particularly fan of the Bard's botany.
Well, he was. He was well educated, and he was obviously versed in Shakespeare, and like a lot of the Victorian age, he was influenced by a book by Ellicombe called Plant Law and Garden, and he decided to do his own Shakespearean botany.
Because there's a lot of plants in Shakespeare.
There are. There's over 130 listed in this book.
Wow.
And many of the names have changed, but Guilfoyle, even though he was writing 100 years ago, it's still really accessible today.
So how does Shakespeare deploy a plant typically? I mean, what's the role of the plant in the drama, do you think?
He claims Shakespeare as a botanist and uses quotations and provides remarks about Shakespeare's plant references and explains plant properties and uses and the origins of the names. And explains why Shakespeare's made the references, like he uses the fruits and vegetables. You know, there's an old expression, for example, like not worth a gooseberry from Henry IV that means of not much value.
I think we should reintroduce that into the common everyday use.
Yeah.
Not worth a gooseberry.
And he also writes about the agricultural purposes and medicinal properties and even the poisonous qualities, like drinking hemlock and in Macbeth, for example.
Mm. So, I mean, Guilfoyle must have been a gentleman of his time. I mean, and this was a moment where people had, you know, broad and particular interests, where they really were students of detail in that way.
Yes, he was. I mean, the Shakespearean references provided by Guilfoyle gave him an opportunity to write about plants more broadly from a literary and historical as well as botanical perspective.
So Guilfoyle, he's you know, this explorer, but he's not alone in wanting to bring back interesting plants into the colony of Victoria.
No, not at all. I mean, the date palm, for example, had not been around very long at all, and he has an entry on dates in the book, and it talks about them growing rapidly in Asia, but in Victoria growing very, very slowly here.
I wonder why that would be.
Exactly. And in fact, he said it took even a half a century for one to mature and to become acclimatised. And he's talking about one in the botanical gardens at the moment, saying that these are the oldest, transplanted from private gardens by the writer some 15 years ago. So that's when Guilfoyle was the director.
Right.
And so he's writing these articles in the late 1800s. And he says that the three that are in the gardens were grown by Howitt in Collins Street, Heels at Elstonwick, and O'Neill at Brighton. And he said the story is well authenticated by these gentlemen that they secured a few pounds of the first preserved date sold in Melbourne. And then it was arranged between them that the seed should be sown by each with the object in view of raising sufficient plants to form an avenue in Collins Street. But so, only six of the seeds germinated.
So we could have had, instead of the Paris end of Collins Street, the Addis Ababa end.
Exactly.
But for an accident of history.
Exactly.
So the book, of course, is Shakespeare, and yet there's this other character, Diana, that's not Shakespeare and maybe is.
Well, we dedicated the book to Henry Neville. We heard about him first in a lecture by John O'Donnell entitled Alias William Shakespeare. John O'Donnell and an Australian academic, William Rubinstein, both mentioned that Henry Neville spent 4 years in Europe from 1578 to 1583
right.
with his former tutor, Henry Savile, who was a prominent educator and Greek scholar. And we really feel that Henry Neville is a great contender as an authorship for the works of Shakespeare. I mean, he went to Italy, he went to Venice, Padua, Rome, France, Germany, the Netherlands. His dates coincide with those of Shakespeare.
Yep.
And there are lots of clues for the pseudonym Shakespeare found in reports of Henry Neville, who was the Queen's French ambassador.
He sounds a remarkable man.
Yeah, fascinating. So I think that's our premise anyway.
That's a family theory.
Well, a recent one.
Well, look, it's an extraordinary book, and what a wonderful sort of coincidence of people and ideas. That's Mr. Guilfoyle's Shakespearean Botany, and it's edited by Edmé Cudmore and Diana Hill, a family operation. Diana, thank you so much.
Thanks very much, Jonathan.
That's in shops. This is Blueprint here on RN.